From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. Half of the field left in the College Football Playoff, David. Our Big Ten teams, we picked a good year to start covering the Big Ten. So it's fun. College Football Playoff, the last quarterfinal game just ended. And we are going live here on the Podcast of Champions, different podcast. We got to recap the post Christmas bowl games, the quarterfinal games where Big Ten teams were involved, and then we're going to preview one more bowl game, and then next week we will preview the semifinals and stuff. So, but how you doing, David?
I'm doing great. I am ready to thrive here in 2025.
You're ready to thrive. Yeah. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Do you know that 2025 is a perfect route? 45 times 45 equals 2025.
So that doesn't happen very often.
No, not too often.
Like,
it won't happen again in our lifetime.
No, that's for sure. In like our grandchildren's lifetime. Like, it's going to be a long time, right?
I mean, it'll be a hot minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, what's 46 times 46? Can you do that real fast?
Not real quick, no. Scott in the...
Why not?
I don't know, because I don't really want to think about that. Scott says, is it weird to chant B1G, Big Ten at games? It's... SEC went down. We're going to talk about all that stuff. But Big Ten,
look,
flexing the muscles a little bit.
As we've always said about football, just generally, it's not a Southern sport. It's very Midwestern based.
Yes.
It is not. There's nothing like, quote, Southern dominance. That's not a thing. This is a Midwestern sport. And I think it's fair to argue that the SEC should maybe be considered a G5.
Yeah. Dave says Oregon didn't belong in the playoffs. Yeah, they didn't belong. That was good. We're going to get to all that. To let you guys know, you can get a hold of us. We got a few emails, Big10Cast, all spelled out, at gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. No voicemails this week, but we do have a couple of text messages. You can tweet us at B1G Podcast, and we are live right now on YouTube.
We're live.
Yeah. So we're live over there. I can get the comments putting up on the screen. So if you see me looking off to the side, you're watching live, it's because I'm looking at your comments or just not paying attention to Dave, whatever it is. But I look at your comments, so put them up on the screen. If you have a question, put question in there and I will start it and get back to it later on the show. If it's a live, if it's a super chat, we will stop the show, stop whatever we're doing and hit this button. Where is it here? And then we'll go right to your super chat as soon as possible because we love doing that and we love getting super chats. We also love getting reviews.
That's right, baby.
On the Apple Podcasting app, you can do it on Spotify. We love 5-star reviews there, but you can't, or there's ratings. There's just no actual review. We get to write something. Our listeners have been great and they write funny things about us, making fun of us, whatever it is. If it's super nice, we don't feel super comfortable. I said super twice, but... Yes, we love to get the good reviews. And now, thanks to John and Brea, I have a stack of $42 gift cards from Trader Joe's that we can send out for our favorite reviews every week. I don't know if we have any new ones, David.
We have two new reviews.
Okay.
We actually had three earlier today when I checked, but one of them has since been, I don't know, deleted or removed.
Oh.
That one was pretty good, too, unfortunately. Indra Octopus, 5-star review, here for chaos made underwhelming. Succeeding in max quantity of eye rolls per minute. Sometimes I chuckle. Sometimes I remember this is a football podcast. Sometimes I wonder why I listen each week. Keep the questionable analogies coming. Early contender. Very good.
Questionable analogies. I'm going to take offense to that. You can make fun of everything, but not the analogies. Those are spot.
That's 100% you.
Okay.
The next one is from Five Moss Creek. Great podcast. 5 stars. Great podcast. I like the banter between the co-hosts and the team intro sound bites. Very nice review. Love it. But obvious winner is Indra Octopus.
Yeah, Indra Octopus. So email me, ryan@uscfootball.com, and we will set you up with a Trader Joe's gift card. That did feel very AI generated.
You thought so?
A little
because it was kind?
It was like
I think the AI would have done a better job of matching the tone of most of the reviews and would have done something biting that didn't make full amount of sense.
It is kind of crazy, huh? When you do that. They do have like AI summary chats sometimes, like when you're doing the YouTube thing. And there's some crazy things in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little scary.
Yeah. It's all stupid.
Do you ever see the Terminator? Yeah. Like literally we're going.
But there. Instead of like inventing Skynet, we're just inventing like just something to fill the internet with dog shit.
Yes.
It's cool.
Like this dating app you're on doesn't have enough fake profiles.
Like, we're not inventing something that could end the world. No. Well, not in any kind of like fun way. It'll just be like slowly increasing the world's temperature every few minutes with all the computer processes. But couldn't it just do Skynet? That would be cooler. Like, at least that would be something.
Yeah.
Instead, it's just let's make Google unusable.
Yeah. Skynet would be more fun.
It's so true.
Back in the war games, they want to play a game.
Like, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Want to play global thermonuclear war?
It's like, yeah, let's play tic-tac-toe for a while.
Yeah.
And that'll make you realize that global that tic-tac-toe is what's going to make you realize that global thermonuclear war is not worth playing.
You're a nuclear. I just heard it.
Nuclear.
Yeah.
I think I'm saying a lot of words. What's today? I don't even know what day it is.
It is Thursday, January 2nd.
Holy crap.
And it is 5:08 p.m.
Thursday.
At time of recording.
Yeah. So we're live right now. We just watched Notre Dame. Hey, you said this.
Hey, look at us.
Jesus.
We're like-minded.
Like a freaking married couple. They walloped Georgia.
Beat that ass.
Beat it pretty good.
I thought they were going to hold on to the ball for the final 9 minutes, but they sadly got called for a bullshit illegal formation. It wasn't bullshit. It was a good call. But
it was a good call. There's a lot of calls.
They would have had the ball for the entire like back half of the fourth quarter, and that would have been so cool.
So Scott says it was a strange game. It was a weird kind of game. I was Notre Dame comes out and just – I think it was like tackle for loss. Pass interference call, tackle for loss. Like it was like, whoa. Like they were coming after it.
Well, and Marcus Freeman, who I called to be fired earlier this year, he
so
I gotta make sure I always cite my just winning predictions and prognostications. He did a really cool thing, which is he ran his punt team out there on a fourth and one, and then quickly ran them off once Georgia had gotten set and brought in his offense again. I don't think
with
they were
enough time because then
Georgia there was like a full 20 seconds.
So he had enough time to do it.
Yeah, they sprinted on and off. And then he I don't think he was going to snap it. Like I don't think so, but they gave every indication they were going to snap it, and Georgia being, you know, fairly undisciplined this year jumps off sides and makes that final epic drive possible.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful work.
Graham had a question. That was the wrong one I put up there. Kiss of death. Kiss of Heath from David David.
Kiss
I think
of
he meant
health. Health.
Death.
Health, he says.
He
not
says
Heath.
Death. I'm sorry. It's like there's a lot going on here. I put the wrong comment up. Graham says, are we counting Indy's win as a Big Ten win?
Hell
yeah.
I mean, sure. Why not? We count it as a victory for ye old Midwest, which encompasses everything from coast to coast that isn't in the South.
I think the SEC has got to be pretty pissed that all these like upper Midwest, you know, schools are in this. I guess Penn State's not upper, but like.
Well, and Texas is not an SEC school. Like, who gives a shit?
It was. Like,
I don't care what conference they're in.
It's been for like a minute. Yeah.
It's fake.
Are your eyes getting worse?
Like, as I get older?
Yeah.
Not there yet, but
Are like the reading thing. Like I'm gonna need reading glasses because like putting these up on the screen, it's like harder to see, and it's like whoa, it's getting there.
That's sad.
I'm 54 now.
I didn't know that.
My birthday was
like a week ago.
Yeah, the 22nd.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So we got to So we know we were wanting to wait till after this game, so we knew who Penn State was gonna play, but we'll end up previewing the semifinals next week sometime. So we'll do a quick show previewing those games and kind of going out. We'll go over all the Big Ten games that happened, and we'll preview one game this week the Duke's Mayo Bowl with Minnesota and Virginia Tech. So we'll get to that in a little bit. All right. So let's start off. We got to go to Detroit, David. All right, no, wait. This is Nashville. Never mind. Is Music City? Yeah, that's Nashville.
Did you think it said Motor City? Are your eyes that
no,
bad?
No. I was just thinking Music City. Oh, is that Detroit? No. That's the Motor City. Let's go with
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Taking on the Missouri Tigers. Row!
Yeah.
Missouri ended up winning 27-24. You know, for most of the first half and into the second half, you were like, Caleb Johnson? Who cares?
Yeah, look, he didn't play, so that's why we both took Missouri -2.5 in this one, mainly because Caleb Johnson wasn't playing.
Yeah, positively.
But then we were like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it was like pure offensive explosion for our Iowa Hawkeyes. And then... yeah, the end of the game happened. Iowa was leading 24-14 just a few minutes into the third quarter. They made a field goal, and it was like an offensive explosion at that point. They were running the ball really well. Kamari Moulton looked really good running the ball. Patterson, can't pronounce his first name. Patterson, he was also looking really good running the ball. And then they just couldn't do anything in their final four drives. It went... interception, punt after 7 yards, punt after 8 yards, and then turnover on downs after 9 yards to end the game for them on offense. I mean, it's hard to be like too mad about it because, again, Caleb Johnson not playing in the game and you were still able to produce some offense. So I think as like a proof of concept, Iowa's offense, for what Iowa is, Iowa's offense was... leaps and bounds improved from what it was last year. And I think that's this, at least this game, I think is proof of concept for it schematically, you know, that you were able to do it without your best player. But at the same time, extremely disappointing to lose a game like this that you were controlling. And it's not like they let Missouri just kind of do whatever they wanted to do offensively at the end. It's just they suddenly couldn't score. Yeah. They couldn't move the ball at all either.
It looked like the old Iowa.
Yeah. And that's just unfortunate because it was, I thought, a pretty, you know, a pretty solid game. I thought Brendan Sullivan looked okay, kind of okay in the same way he looked when he was, you know, healthy in the middle part of the year, functional enough for this Iowa team, but just not enough at the end. And so Missouri was able to take it. I think they were able to cover 2.5.
Yeah. We got this one right.
Yeah. And for Missouri, you know, again, I think Iowa's defense limited them well enough. It wasn't a vintage Iowa defensive performance, but also this wasn't a vintage Iowa defense this year. I think it was about what you would have expected defensively, maybe a little bit worse. It's just the offense couldn't quite keep up at the end.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the offense work really well. They were running the ball well in the first half, and then only 3 points after halftime. It's sort of like there was a regression there. That first TD drive for Iowa looked like, not an air raid, but it was just like, I don't know if they've had a better touchdown drive in the last few years. It looked absolutely perfect. Then they get a kickoff return for a touchdown. That dude with the weird last name that doesn't pronounce the way it's spelled or whatever. Yep. But he, I mean, that was electric. And they looked like they were in control of this game. And congratulations. Hold on. We need to congrats you. This was your first pick correct.
That's
against
right.
the spread in the whole bowl season.
That's so right, baby.
You were 0-6.
And it was not
one.
A lonely pick.
No, you like he had a friend. You know,
that's right, baby.
You had 5 chances and you had two notches on your belt for this one. But anyway, it's sort of after that kickoff return, it was kind of like meh. On the broadcast, they said Iowa on the season, David, is 3 of 6 on fourth down. By far the fewest fourth down attempts in the country. They had a 4th and 2, I think, from the +40-ish. And they end up taking a delay of game so they could punt. And even the announcers called them out, like, this is not modern college football. It's 4th and 2 from the +40. You don't take a delay of game
time
to have...
Time out. What? You have our picks wrong. I had 3 correct picks.
What are you talking about?
Missouri, Illinois, and Penn State.
Oh, yeah.
You're cracked.
Oh,
you're out of your mind.
6. Okay.
There's 6 games, but I also had 3 among the 5 you counted.
So
you, sir, are cheating me. I want an audit. I want an audit right now.
So I'm 4-2, and you're 3-3.
I need a loyal listener to audit all of the picks this year. I want you to go back ahead. And watch every single show.
You count them.
Because he's been cheating me all season.
I only counted 5 games. But
this entire year of picks needs an asterisk. Okay?
I got to add one more to each of us. Because we both got that one right. Okay, 17.
Liars and cheaters.
Yeah. So you got Missouri right?
I got Missouri, I got Illinois, and I got Penn State.
Okay, and I got Missouri.
And only because I picked against my better judgment did I not get Ohio State.
All right, I got Missouri, Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State. Okay, so I was 4-2. I just missed the game. I didn't give myself an extra win. I docked myself a win. So I was actually 4-2, so better than I thought, and you were 3-3.
I need an audit.
But what was your thought? So there was that. Mm-hmm. Iowa was down 3 with 3:21 left and punted on a 4th-and-2.
Insane.
They had a 4th-and-inches near midfield, and that's when they had to go for it. And to me, they looked so reluctant to – they didn't know what to do because it's like, we never go for it. Like, you had to. There was no choice. Like, it almost looked like we really want to punt, but we can't. We have to go for it. And it was like this confusing play that they just didn't work. And I feel like not going for it all those times makes it harder when you only go for it once every other game. That's bullshit to me. But there was at least 2 insane times that they didn't go for it on 4th down. And you go for it more than I would. But I was watching this going, and even the announcers were like, this is insane. Like, Iowa screwed themselves. They allowed Missouri like 2 50-plus-yard field goals. They totally Iowa'd them. But then they got so conservative, they needed to just go for it for the – expected value, right, of what you would do. And it just I was like baffled. They deserve to lose this game from the play calling and the clock management and all that.
Yeah, I mean, the reason they were punting after, you know, three plays was because they were being way too conservative. I mean, if you want to tell me you don't want to go for it on the 4th-and-3 at your own 32 with still almost 8 minutes to go in a tie game.
I think it was 4th-and-2, but I don't know. Maybe, but
it ended up being a 4th-and-3 because Brennan Sullivan, I think, got dropped for a slight loss. But it was a 4th-and-3, the first one. No, they did this on back-to-back friggin' plays. 4th-and-3, they punt on their own 32 with about 8 minutes to go. And it's still a tie game at that point. Okay, fine. Probably should still go for it, but fine. But the second one, you're now down by 3 points. There's under 3.5 minutes to go. It's 4th-and-2, same situation at your own 33. That's an automatic decision. Like, and I don't care your style of football at that point. Like, I understand Iowa's a punt and play defense, and I get it. You want to be a little bit more conservative, but that's insanely conservative. Like, that's you're giving up your chance to control the outcome. You're giving up your chance to end this game. And yes, they get the ball back, and that's fine and good, but suddenly you're putting your offense, which isn't great, even as improved as it is, it isn't great, struggled in the second half, you're putting them in a position where they have to score with under 2 minutes to go, I think with no timeouts at that point.
Yeah, I think
like, it's just, come on.
The 4th-and-2, I think they were winning, and it was 4th-and-2 at the plus 40 that didn't go for that one, and they took the delay to punt. And you're just like, come on, dude. Like,
what? Oh, that one, yes. I mean, that one was insane, too, but like that was a 4th-and-10. Like, whatever, that's Iowa. Iowa's not going to do that.
Like, I thought that was a 4th-and-2. Maybe I wrote it down. I thought that was a 4th-and-2.
No, they had a 4th-and-10 at the Missouri 43 coming out of halftime. Is that the one you're thinking of?
No, I thought maybe it was before. I don't know. I have to go back and look. But
I mean, there might have been too. I mean, there was a 4th-and-7. They did this a lot. There was a 4th-and-7 at the Missouri 45 in the first half, where it was a tie game.
Okay.
I mean, there were a lot of these decisions. There were a lot of things where a more aggressive. It was a 4th-and-2 at the Missouri 40 before they took the delay of game. So that's probably the one you're thinking
of. Yes, it was the delay of game. Yes.
So that's
the delay of game.
That's Iowa being insane. But there were, I mean, there are 3 punt decisions in this game, 4 maybe, that you would be like, well, you shouldn't do that, like analytically. And you just wonder how much meat they're leaving on the bone because they are very well coached on special teams. They are very well coached on defense. And if you paired that with a, you know, positive EV head coach or positive EV decision making, maybe he outsources it to some analytics company like a lot of teams do, would they be better? Or is there some kind of something in the ephemera, something in the ether yeah. about Iowa football that demands that they punt on fourth and short? I don't know. I actually don't know the answer. Like, I think there is something kind of lost in all the numbers about this.
I think it hurt them when they had to go for it in that fourth and one.
Totally. I think you're right. I think not putting yourself in a position where you're confident that you're going to go for it on certain things.
Yeah.
Guys then put a lot of pressure on that. You know, suddenly the play call has to be perfect. Suddenly everything has to be perfect. Where if you get in the habit of, you know, fourth and shorts are down, we're just going to do that and we're going to run our offense, it doesn't feel so highly pressurized. You probably approach it with more confidence or at least more ease.
Can you believe 6 fourth down attempts all season? Like, I think USC had a couple teams go for it again 5 times in one game.
Yeah.
We have a super chat.
That's right, baby.
Thank you. Eli.
As sad as I am over the Rose Bowl, happy New Year and a shout out to my nephew, Grant Hides. Keep it mediocre, boys. Go Cucks.
Oh.
Sad face. Thank you, Eli. You're the man. Happy New Year to you as well. And shout out to Grant as well.
Shout out to Grant. Thanks for that. Thank John and Brea gave me some Rolls Parade tickets. So it was cool. I was feeling a little under the weather. A good friend of mine, she was taking her daughter to the Rose Bowl with some friends. So I gave them the parade ticket. So they went early, had a good time. They're Duck fans. So they didn't enjoy the game, but they told me they enjoyed the parade. So
that's awesome.
That was cool.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Okay. Well, so Big Ten takes one on the chin there, but I didn't like the way. Yes, it was, people were talking in the chat. It was Iowa football, but man. But Missouri did. They nailed 2. One was a 56-yarder. It was like.
Yeah.
Totally out Iowa-ing Iowa. All right, let's go to this one was pretty fun. We had
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow, scratch, 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 scratch.
They were taking on and walloped the Alabama Crimson Tide. What do you think?
That's pretty good. Pretty like tidy.
That? Yeah. This was an insane start to the game, and then it was just a matter of, like, hanging on, I think, and playing defense and just making this one of the most frustrating games to watch in human history.
Yes. Not enjoyable.
No. Alabama.
Aliens came down and you wanted to show them college football. You didn't show them the second half of this game.
No. But, I mean, you honestly didn't show them the first, like, 4 drives either. So Alabama's first 4 drives went like this. 6 plays, 9 yards, turnover on downs. So that came... Anyway, that was cool. The next play, the next drive, fumble. 1 play, fumble. The next drive, 2 plays, interception. And the next drive, 1 play, fumble. Michigan turned all of that into 16 points, and that would have been enough to win this game.
Yeah.
They eventually win 19-13. It is not important to talk about the rest of this game. It doesn't matter. Michigan kind of sat on him, like kind of just didn't let him do anything. And that was pretty fun to watch, especially because as we talked about pregame, they were missing some dudes. Like they were missing some guys on the defensive line. Didn't matter. I mean, Alabama looked absolutely inept. Jalen Milroe did not look good.
No.
They couldn't run the ball at all. Are we ready to say this is a bad Alabama team? Like, and not even by like relative standards, but like, look at their schedule. I mean, they beat. So if we recontextualize things, they beat a not great Georgia team. Like, they're fine. They're not great.
That's big. It was a big win at the time, but I think it's
They beat a Missouri team that was kind of broken midseason. I guess got right a little bit. They beat a not great LSU team. They got smoked by Oklahoma, lost at Vandy. I mean, not great.
They got the benefit of the doubt a lot.
The benefit of the doubt in a major way. But
the whole SEC is, and it's not looking good for the SEC right now with all this.
No, and I think,
win the games.
Analytics systems, which still weight preseason rankings pretty late into the season, I mean, they're not flawless, and I don't know what exactly the issue was. I think Georgia, if you didn't have all the offseason stuff, maybe they would have been better, and maybe that would have kind of lifted all boats. But this Alabama team, very talented, played way under their talent level. And I think that's true of a lot of these SEC teams.
I mean, they had a sudden – I mean,
and frankly, like Texas made the Final Four, but Texas probably shouldn't have made the Final Four.
Yeah, that was –
So anyway, Michigan, what a great close to the season. That was, I think, for a large portion of it, felt very disappointing for a lot of Michigan fans. But now you closed it with a win over Ohio State and then beating Bama in a bowl game. That, I mean, Bama's starting quarterback decided to play in, which I think speaks to they were treating this like a real game and Michigan still beat them. So
right.
I think for Michigan, finishing this year 8-5 with all the turnover they had, borders on successful season. Like, borders on not something that you need to be, like, counting as a check mark against Sharon Moore.
Yeah, I mean,
especially given their quarterback issues all year.
And you beat Ohio State. You beat Alabama. Like, you know, it's pretty good. It's a big win, I think, for Michigan too. Really, to be able to shut down Alabama's run game, like 68 yards rushing. Michigan tried to run the ball a lot. They ran for 2.3 yards an attempt. I think Alabama did the same, but three turnovers for Alabama, especially the early ones that really.
People are demanding an elephant noise.
Oh, they want like.
You think I can do it?
Yeah, give it a shot. I think you've done that before. That's pretty good.
Was that good?
I'm going to give you applause again.
All right.
For getting your first pick right and then nailing the elephant.
Hell yeah.
Alabama, speaking of, went for it on third down in this game three times. Didn't make any of them, but
is that bad?
That's bad. 16-0.
You know what Kirk Ferentz is screaming right now as he listens to the show? Dedicated listener, Kirk Ferentz. See?
Shouldn't go for it all that much.
Ever.
Yeah. Just punt. This is New Year's Eve day. I had some friends. We do a golf thing usually on New Year's Eve day. So I'm watching, like, in the cart, and they're like, "What are you watching?" I'm like, "Alabama, Michigan," on my phone. I missed a lot of the good parts in the very beginning, but I got
the only good parts.
The only good parts. But I was like, so I just smiling because, I took Michigan plus 13.5. Dave had Alabama minus 13.5, and like as soon as I look at my phone, it's 16-0 already. I'm like.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Like, I'm like, yes. And then, it was never in doubt. Like, but Alabama did come back and they had a chance. Michigan kicks like that field goal to make it 19-13. But Alabama could have come back and won the game, which would have been kind of devastating because but they were never in danger of covering this one. I think, and I think I didn't go with the SEC sort of this team could have been in the playoff mindset. I'm not saying you did, but I think you were more. It was more indication of what you thought about Michigan. But they just came off this big win over Ohio State, and Ohio State's looked really good. I sort of was in the same boat with the South Carolina game we'll get to later, and they just didn't look real. So I think anyone that was trying to give the SEC the benefit of the doubt, nowhere did you see a game that was like, see, the SEC's freaking good. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there was a game all weekend that you would say that, or this week. I think this was a really good win for the Big Ten because you're fighting for supremacy, but there was just this understanding that the SEC is like better. You know, Michigan winning last year, you could say, okay, that's like an anomaly. Well, I mean, not that the SEC could still win, like Texas could win at all, but this, what we've seen in the bowl game is like, do you really think South Carolina was that good? They should have been in the playoff. We'll see. Ole Miss is playing right now. We could turn it on. None of these teams looked like, wow, these teams are, dominating. So I think this was a really big win for the conference. And it was funny that you were given 13.5 points and lost outright. So that seemed very cool.
That was very cool.
Yeah. Well, you get me back.
I agree. I think it's very cool.
You get me back later. So then now I'm in the cart, 2 hours later, this game starts. So now I'm like on my little phone playing golf. And have a split screen. At least I love YouTube TV for that. I got them both, but had to start watching this game.
Washington Huskies.
They were taking on the Louisville Cardinals. I guess we'll select a new pope now. Louisville won the Sun Bowl 35-34. This game was everything that the Bama Michigan game was not. That this was fun to watch for a healthy portion of it. It included Jed Fish being stupid.
Were there pianos?
There were pianos. He had, let me count them. Hang on. So on the final drive for Washington, where they were down 35-28, we'll get to the 2-point in just a second. But On the final drive, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think they had 8 shots at it from inside the Louisville 10. What was your favorite handoff to a running back?
Well, they've been running the ball well all game, right?
Like decently. Like, I mean, not great, but
they finished with 98 yards rushing.
You got 8 yards, buddy.
They're averaging 2.7 yards a rush for the game.
Look, so. I've played a decent amount of college football, 25 at this point. You know what you do in the red zone? You run the ball, buddy.
Okay.
The field gets compressed. Run the damn ball. A lot of passing is what I'm saying. There was a lot of passing down there in the tight area.
Well, they weren't running the ball well, is what I'm saying.
But then after you have 8 plays inside the Louisville 10 and you're really struggling to get it in and you finally do, right? You go for 2? Like, did you feel like you'd finally hit a rhythm?
It's like, we're 1 for our last 8. Like, yeah, I like those odds.
I like our chances. They go for the win. They don't get it.
You're betting 0 in Vegas on the roulette wheel. Like, yeah, I like 0's due.
They go for the win. They don't get it. I mean, in a vacuum, I don't hate the decision to go for it and try. But like in the context of what was happening in that game, it's like, buddy, just take this and go to overtime. And in overtime, you'll have the ball at the 25 and you can try for a big play instead of trying to work your red zone magic inside the 10, buddy. It kind of messed. I mean, it was a really interesting game. It was a lot of fun to watch. Louisville here in the Jeff Brohm era is playing some good offensive football. But I think the big takeaway for Washington going forward is that DeMond Williams is the man.
He is,
and he rocks. And he's going to be a ton of fun to watch going forward. They'll win a lot of games with him. It's just Jed Fish desperately needs to outsource some of his more avant-garde decision-making because it's just – they're leaving points on the board and they're just not doing stuff that I think is, you know, like we were talking about with Kirk Ferentz, and it's maybe the other side of the coin from that, but he's just not, it's not all positive from him. Like he can be a negative on the sideline and that stuff is correctable. Just hire somebody to do it for you.
No, I agree with you there. We both got this one wrong. We had Washington -2.5. And Louisville was kind of in control out of the game, but then Washington would come back. Was it 21-7 or was it 21-14 early? Washington ties it before halftime. Louisville comes out and scores a couple of touchdowns. It's 35-21. And you're like, uh-oh. But then Washington comes back. You know, they get some stops. And then the go for two thing. Now, selfishly, I hated it because we had 3.5.
Yeah.
Or 2.5. And we needed them to win by 2.5. So go to overtime, win by a field goal or something, and we cover. It's even going to be hard to cover in overtime because if you go to like, you know, third overtime, you're going for 2.
Right.
But that was our only shot. So I didn't like Jed Fish doing that. And in the chat, Tony's saying it's the Sun Bowl, go for 2. I don't know. I kind of felt like you were. Like they weren't having a ton of success. If you were running the ball and you saw something in the red zone or inside the 10 –
but they didn't. Like,
no,
they
didn't run
didn't.
The ball. Yeah, that was the problem. But they didn't run the ball well. They threw the ball well in this game.
Well, and the thing is, like, they had just put together, like, 2, I would say, really good drives. Like, yes. It was the first touchdown drive took 13 plays, 97 yards. Like, that was cool. Then the second one was 11 plays, 62 yards. Like, they had driven the ball. Go to overtime, and your offense is moving. Like, just try not to get it within the 5 again. Score from the 15.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of it is hindsight. But watching it live, I was like, ooh, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be one thing, again, like you said, if you had scored, like, lightning quick from the 8 or something, then you feel like, okay, we can score. Or when you get it to the 4, you scored very quickly. But they weren't in a rhythm. They didn't seem – like, it seemed like it took a lot of work to get that one in there. So, I don't know.
Williams was really good. He got sacked, I think, 5 times in this one, but – he ran it 15 other times.
Yeah.
He had a touchdown run. He threw for 4 touchdowns.
He's a stud.
He did have the 1 pick, but he was the leading rusher despite the 5 sacks. He was the offense, you know. There were lulls in there. Like to not come out after halftime and be able to put a scoring drive together. I think that was problematic. But, you know, back against the wall, down 14, made a bunch of good plays in those final two drives. And I just would have liked to see him not come down to that. Sometimes you have confidence, like the team just moved the ball and they picked up some third and twos along the way. And you're like, this team's going to, like, they're punching this in no matter what. I didn't get the, like, I just felt like this was going to be a,
yeah,
not a play that's going to work.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the feeling, you know, like watching the game.
Agreed. Agreed.
And I don't know if that ever comes into play, David, if you're like, hey, you got to, I mean, I think there's sometimes it just, like you said, when you have to go for two or whatever, there's just, it's, but if you feel like, man, I'd rather just tie this because I feel we have a better shot.
Not to go all like football head stuff, but I think it's backed up mathematically too. You were favored for a reason. And watching the game, it wasn't like Louisville had like this huge man advantage. Like, and usually if you're going to go for two at an end of a game where you feel like, oh God, we really got to do this, it's because you're the underdog. Washington was, you know, they were decent. Like they could go toe to toe with this team for a little while longer and probably come out ahead. Just anyway, in the grand scheme of things, you make that and everyone's happy. You missed it. No one's happy. Yeah. Just feel for the game. It didn't feel like the right time.
So we've had some pianos falling. We've had upsets. We've had, you know, some interesting things happen. Nothing as interesting as what happened in this one. Do you think South Carolina and Illinois was a rivalry? I don't know. It is now, David. We got a lot to talk about in this one.
Illinois fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Let's start with the game itself, and then we can get into the assorted
shenanigans,
fun stuff. In the Citrus Bowl, Illinois beat the South Carolina Gamecocks. Cock-a-doodle-doo! I don't know.
That's pretty good.
Not very good. Yeah. It's okay. 21-17, Illinois won. I would say, contained your fellow Lenora Sellers remarkably well.
He did.
And kept him to being just a passer for the most part. I think running the ball, not super effective. And there have been times this year where he looked incredible. This was not one of those games.
He only had like 19 yards rushing or something.
Yeah, and I think it was a decent amount of sacks too. And mostly contained that South Carolina rushing attack. And Illinois' defense has not been great this year. So doing this against, again, a pretty – what we thought of again. I need to keep saying this. What we thought of again is a pretty good SEC team. You know, South Carolina was another team that was on the fringe of the playoff.
People talked about it.
But then you kind of recontextualize their season in light of, you know, what we're seeing from the SEC. And it's like, were they? Were they really good? Or did they just play in a, you know, somewhat down SEC? And
I think you're right.
I think that's a big part of it. Illinois, meanwhile, was tested by the metal. By the forge, the iron forge that is the Big Ten, and came out unscathed, hard steel. They finished 10-3. The game itself was a lot of fun, back and forth, and Illinois more or less just made enough plays at the end to pull this one out. They scored a go ahead touchdown with 7:29 to go, and then stoned South Carolina the next trip down. Yeah. I will say South Carolina missed some opportunities. They had two turnovers on downs in the first half. They missed a field goal, I think, at the end of the first half. That would have been decisive because then they wouldn't have had to go for it on the 4th-and-4 late in the game. But taking advantage of missed opportunities is a big deal for teams, and Illinois did it. Now, would you like to talk about the assorted?
Well, real quick, this was a little weird. So, Josh McCray, by the way, over 100. He was like pretty much Illinois' offense. Like Altmaier was okay, like nothing special. McCray ran the ball really well. This was both teams converted a lot of third downs. They only had 9 drives each, so it was just one of those things where it was just sort of like you had the ball. And everyone moved the ball pretty well. Like there wasn't a bunch of 3-and-outs or things like that. But you know, Illinois, like they sort of had that. They just kind of stayed a little bit ahead the whole time, and you know, ended up holding on and working. You felt like South Carolina could come back and take the lead, but this was Illinois. They kind of played their game. It was a shortened game. Like I said, there was only 9 possessions each, and Illinois did what they needed to do to win. But then it got weird.
Yeah, it got very weird. So where would you like to begin?
I know in the chat, let's see, Andrew says, I still don't know what Beamer and
can I be Bilma honest? Can I be honest?
Yeah.
I still don't really have a good grasp of what the hell was going on.
So I'll give you my thoughts on it, real understanding. Just I watched like the press conference and stuff. So apparently South Carolina and Beamer went to the officials and said, hey, on a kickoff, can we basically it's like there, you put your arms. I don't know if you can see the thing. You put your arms out. I'll put me on the screen. You put like your arms out like this. So it looks like a touchback sort of thing. Uh-huh. But they were running like a trick play on it. And he equated it to like if you're faking, like you think the you're going to fair catch a punt and someone's pointing down at the ball, but actually someone caught it and is running. You were basically trying to make the people that were covering the kickoff think that we were downing the punt, they're downing the kickoff, but they didn't. And then it was like, I think it was a pitch or something. And then, so it was like a trick play on there, but Beamer checked with the officials and they said, as long as you're not waving your arms, it's legal. Well, I guess Bielma took offense to that. And late in the game, when one of the Illinois players was down on the field, but Illinois was in control of the game, he walks towards Beamer and the sideline and puts his arms out like that and basically taunts Beamer and the entire sideline. So it stemmed from, and then Bielma confirmed a tweet that said that basically and saying, yeah, that's the best way I've seen. So he thought that was Bush League. And then Beamer thought it was Bush League for the head coach of the opposing team while his player was on the ground injured, would take the time to come over and bitch about like a legal play. And there was also an incident where one of the Illinois players was like walking towards the sideline and looked and saw, and they just said, go down. And he went down. Like, so it was like a complete fake.
So,
thing. So there was that's my understanding of what was
okay. I think that clarifies somewhat. So my feeling on it, watching it and afterwards, is that within the rules, though it may be for Shane Beamer to have done that, and that's fine. But if you're going to do that and the opposing coach is upset about it, because that is understood to be like a signal that the, you know, like the reason you're using it is because you know that, right?
Yeah.
Like the reason you're doing that is because you know it's going to make them slow down and not fully cover the kick, right?
Yeah.
So if you know that and they know that and you're exploiting this thing in the rules and then he is justifiably pissed about it and comes over and says something to you, like you can't get livid about it. Like later in the game, Bielema puts in, does the late substitution that forces the timeout, right?
Yeah.
For South Carolina. And Beamer gets livid himself. While Bielema is just kind of grinning on his own sideline. And it's like, that's what you should have done, Beamer. Like, you should have had, like, the shit-eating grin on your face. Like, well, sorry about that. But he gets all butthurt about it. And it's like, come on, man. If you want to exploit a rule that's, you know, messed up or whatever, and that they probably will correct in the offseason or something, that's one thing. But you don't get to then, like, play the, like, I'm, you know, above you and you're doing the wrong thing. Like, Bielema was just being aggressive and trying to say, hey, you know, I know what's going on here. You guys were messing around. So I take Bielema's side of it.
Okay.
For the most part here. Also, again,
I think it's a bunch of overpaid gym teachers bitching at each other.
But totally. Yeah. Totally. But but it's one thing to like bitch in the game at somebody, but then to just be like whining afterwards and all that kind of crap. It's just like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Just get a grip. And also, and this is the important thing, I am taking the side of Midwestern ascendancy, because this was yet another game of Midwestern dominance over the South, which we all knew. Going back to the Civil War,
yeah,
what has been proven more than the Midwest dominates the South at all times in perpetuity?
And Illinois dominated, well, not dominated, but beat South Carolina. I had South Carolina minus 10, so double-digit favorite. They lost the game outright, so, and Dave had Illinois, so... This was the first one in bowl season that you got right and I got wrong.
That's right, baby.
And your second correct pick. So
that's right,
pretty
baby.
Pretty impressive there. So that was and there was some disrespect too, because you talked to Altmaier after the game and he said, this is funny. He was being interviewed and he's like, He didn't feel like they were respected. So this might be part of the underlining tone that at an event, you know, they go to like Dave and Buster's or some shit and they do the things like before bowl games. Uh-huh. He said that the South Carolina players, some of them thought that they were playing Syracuse because it's like an orange thing. Like literally, like, and people are pointing out in the chat, like Illinois was 9-3 and they lost to like Oregon and what, Ohio State or whatever, or, yeah, or Penn State. Now Penn State, I think, you know, they should have been the team that was like, they had a better resume than South Carolina. They had a bet. So to beat them heads up, I think that makes more sense. No one was talking about Illinois as like a fringe playoff team, but if you're going to talk about Alabama and you're talking about South Carolina and Ole Miss, like Illinois could have been in there. But I think that might have been part of the disrespect too. That was freaking hilarious. Or like, they don't even know who they're playing. So, yeah. You get a little bit of insular shit going down in the South, right? Like where you just don't know anything else. Like this is where all of it is. So then you kind of go outside the house and get your ass kicked. You're like, oh, I was like the toughest dude around, but not anymore. But this was a good win, another good win as a double digit underdog for the Big Ten. Two times double digit underdogs to the SEC and comes out ahead. So pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool indeed.
Let's get to the playoffs. And we've got
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. They were taking on the Boise State Broncos. Nay! Penn State won 31-14. A lot of things to take away from this one. First, Penn State's defense, I think, eye test wise, I came away thinking they were pretty dominant. Statistically, not. They gave up over 400 yards. They allowed Ashton Gentry to get 100 yards.
Yeah.
But it was on 30 carries, baby.
It was. And that was like at the end.
And
they were Gentry, giving
him
the ball.
Yeah, Gentry was. They were trying to get him purpose. The record at the end. And Maddox Madsen, he threw it a lot. I think a lot more than Boise State would have wanted to. He threw it for 35 times. And he was able to complete some balls. Like, it wasn't like they completely shut down the passing attack. But they forced him into three critical second half mistakes, or at least two that were critical. The final one didn't really matter. But wiped out any chance for Boise State victory with a couple of second half interceptions before the third one in the final drive. But I thought defensively what they were able to do to Ashton Gentry, which no one has been able to do, but kind of what I thought pregame when we were talking about it, I thought it would be less. Actually, I thought they would hold him to about 80, but holding him to 104 on 30 carries is a better job than anyone's been able to do.
Yeah.
On him. They were keeping
a lot of chances.
They had two people tackling him at all times.
Yeah.
There were always two people in the vicinity. It's like they had a spy on just on the running back with two guys at all times, which, you know, and then Madsen was able to find some man coverage. But it was really, really impressive job for that defensive front. And Abdul Carter was out for a lot of this game, and they were still able to do a lot of this.
He was in some like hyperbaric chamber or something trying to get ready for the next round.
Exactly.
I saw a tweet of that or something like, ooh.
Offensively, Penn State was good enough. I think the running game continues to be the major strength for them. Catron Allen in this game, more than Nick Singleton, was the bell cow. But those two guys combined again for 29 carries for 221 yards and a touchdown. That's pretty damn good. Drew Aller was fine. He wasn't super efficient.
I didn't think he was that good.
He was fine.
People were like praising him afterwards. I'm like, he missed a bunch of throws.
I will say a continuing issue for Penn State, and maybe it won't hurt them, but I think it has limited that offense, is, and it's something we talked about early season, they just don't have a lights-out receiver. They don't have somebody who's just going to go out there and make a play, and I thought that was missing again in this game. They've got Tyler Warren, who's an awesome tight end.
Yeah.
But when you need a guy outside who's going to make
two touchdowns, but only six catches on the
Yeah. But when you need a guy outside who's going to make a big play, it hasn't been Omari Evans. It hasn't been Harrison Wallace. It's just they're missing that one piece. And I think if you added that one piece to this team, and I think that what I'm saying is I think that hurts Aller to an extent, because, yes, you would like him to be able to be a little bit more accurate downfield, make a little bit of a quicker decision on the break of the route or whatever it is. But he also doesn't have any of Ohio State's receivers, like anyone at that level.
No.
Like, he doesn't have a Jeremiah Smith.
I don't know if anybody
does,
but yeah.
He doesn't have a Buka. He doesn't have Tate. Like, he doesn't have anyone, like, even the level of one of those guys. So I think that hurts. But the fact that they were able to do this, completely control the game, I think, for the most part. You know, there was a brief period in the third quarter where it looked like Boise State was going to make this a game. They did miss a couple of field goals that, you know, would have obviously changed the complexion of the end game. But I didn't really have any doubt at any point that Penn State wasn't going to pull this out. And I was not surprised that they ended up covering.
Yeah, we both had Penn State minus 11, and we both got it right. It got a little – this had a feeling to me like Penn State was playing with its food a little bit. It was 14-0, I believe, and then Aller – was it he threw the pick? And – or no, they got the Genty fumble, and then – Aller turns it over right away. It could have been 21-0. And then you're sort of like putting this away. We'll talk about the next game where like the floodgates were opening and just kept going in the Rose Bowl. But in this one, the floodgates started to open up and then just kind of slowed down. It was a trickle. And you didn't feel like you were going to recover, that Boise State was going to be able to recover. Mattson made some throws because they were really stacking the box, but Genty never got through. I think he had one like 25-yard run or something. But that was it. Like, they did an amazing job of shutting him down. And Penn State got cute. Like, they could have scored more besides the 20. It could have been 21-0. I think you're just done. It wasn't. And then, you know, stick around and end up being, what, 17-7 and a half. But there were like third and shorts, and Penn State was running some weird trick play and throwing it downfield. And they could have just pounded the ball more and just completely, they were in control, but does it make sense there? They didn't have as much control as I would have liked to see. So, yeah.
I don't think they were treating them enough like just a Boise State. I think they were treating them like a, you know, oh, this is a real credible opponent. We've got to like kind of break out the razzle dazzle. And I think, I don't know. I think they could have just manned up and beaten them.
Like, yeah.
And I think there was. I agree. Yeah, they did. But I think they could have done it even more.
You're right. Like, it could have been worse. You know, with the. But that, I mean, this is. I mean, Penn State, you're in the Final Four. You know, and yes, was the road a little easier? Did you have to play Ohio State after, you know, 3.5 weeks off? No. But you took care of business, and I don't think we ever thought like James Franklin had an SMU or Boise State problem. They have like an Ohio State, Michigan problem. A Dog's Life in Portland says, is a good time to point out that the four teams with 3.5 week buys all lost. That's a thing in the NFL too, where like if you had a bye, some of the teams that have the best record and gets a bye, you're now playing a team that just won a game and they're fresh and they're not fresh, but they're.
How many times have we seen it with bowl games, just general bowl games? And so like Penn State, what they ended up doing was having a single week off, you know, where it was they played in the Big Ten title game. Then they get a week off to recover. Then they're back at it. Like, that's the rhythm of a season. But you take 3 weeks off, it's like, do you even remember how to play football? What sport is this? Yet another thing where I think this format just sucks. Like, it just sucks for the higher seeded teams. It sucks in that, you know, teams that were or should have been eliminated in past formats or not. And I'm not talking about the ASUs of the world. I'm talking about, you know, Ohio State. They shouldn't have been in this. And they are, and we'll talk about that next.
Yeah. Speaking of sucking, the next game, we have the Rose Bowl.
Oregon Ducks.
And they were taking on
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Hold two thoughts within your mind. Become like me, a philosopher king. One, Ohio State is very clearly probably the best team in the country, right?
I think so.
Most talented, best team in the country. Two, they do not deserve to be at this point in the season. They lost twice. They lost to Michigan, which is not a very good Michigan team. They already lost to this Oregon team once. It's a dumb format. Can we all agree? I mean, the 12 teams.
The seeding is dumb. I don't mind. I like the 12. I'm cool with the 12.
It's a dumb format.
But I don't. The seeding is. Oregon shouldn't have had. This shouldn't have been Oregon's first game.
No. But it all. Like, I don't know. Any world where, like, Ohio State's regular season, like, just tripping on its own dick doesn't matter. Like, it's just not like what in what way does that Michigan game matter now? Like, it only matters to Michigan fans.
It matters to me because I want to see Ohio State win the national championship and have fans be upset at the season because they lost to Michigan.
Yeah, that's true. But like, it's just
that's fun.
You know, it, I don't know. It just the whole argument about it diminishing the regular season. I think you just point to this and you say, yeah, exactly. It'd be one thing if Ohio State had lost one game to Oregon and then they got to avenge it in this game. I don't think anyone would begrudge them a place in a playoff.
But like, Alabama was getting three, like you're getting, like Alabama had three losses and South Carolina had three losses. You're trying to get them in too, you know? Like,
right. It's stupid that there's 12 teams. There shouldn't be 12 teams. It shouldn't be a 12 team playoff.
Grant says these past two OSU games just prove that Chip Kelly is an active listener of the POC.
That's right, baby.
I sent David a text like, hey, I don't know who this Ohio State play caller is, but maybe UCLA can hire him.
Just playing to his team's strengths, just doing what needs to be done, no matter, you know, whatever his personal preferences are, just throwing the ball, man. Yeah, okay, so let's get into the game a little bit. Enough of my bullshitting. Ohio State blew their ass out. It finished 41-21. It was not that close. This was not a close game in any way. This was 34-0 at one point. What I'll say is this. This game was over maybe on the first touchdown for Ohio State because, well, second touchdown for sure. Because on that play.
You never felt that Oregon was going
to
win.
No. Sure. But on that play to score the second touchdown, the ball comes in and it's like it was a glitched video game because the Oregon DB has his hand here. I think it was Igbuka who caught it. And the ball comes like here. And it doesn't like, and he's got tight coverage on him. Like, it's good coverage. There are two other Oregon DBs closing on the play.
That might have been Smith. Or was that the touchdown catch? Or was
I'm thinking the second touch. I think it was the second touchdown.
Okay.
Let me get it up. Yeah, it was the Igbuka one in the seam down the field. They're going into the left end zone. You remember the one I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking
about. Yeah. There's another one later on where Jeremiah Smith catches a ball where the Oregon defender signals incomplete because he was like, there's no way anybody caught that thing, and he had caught it. But at that point where Igbuka catches that ball and touchdown, and it's like every component of that from the throw, perfect, had to fit into like that.
Will Howard looked like
he had to fit a football
he was like
into a window that size, and he did. He broke the laws of physics to do so. But he's making that throw. They're making that catch, and their DBs are not making those plays. And it's like, oh, no. This is not going to be good. And it was just that over and over and over and over again for those 34 points. Jeremiah Smith, like what he was catching, and then Oregon's inability to recognize that, hey, we got to cover him. There was a play. I think it was maybe the third touchdown of the game, fourth, lost count, doesn't matter, where they just do some simple motion and the entire Oregon defense flows with the motion. And Jeremiah Smith just runs up the seam, runs a little corner, and is wide open. Like, nobody near him. Not even, like, the safety who is supposed to be, like, the back line of the defense does not even flow with him. And he just basically walks into the end zone.
Yeah.
It was just play after play after play like that. And it was like, I mean, Oregon's defensive backs were in hell. Like, I don't want to, like, say
they're not that big, and the big wide receivers for Ohio State just tortured them.
Well, and Will Howard was at his absolute peak powers. Like, I don't think I've ever seen him throw the ball more accurately than he did in this game.
Yeah.
Like, every ball was, like, pretty much pinpoint perfect. I mean, there were a couple of plays where maybe Oregon could have made a play and turned it into a pick or something, but it was not often. He was excellent. And Oregon just – so – that was the defensive side, and they were not going to win this game just because of how they were playing defensively. Like, there was no way they were winning this game, but they couldn't even make it a shootout. They couldn't run the ball at all.
It was,
Jordan James got hurt early, which obviously that doesn't help, but when he was in there, he wasn't running the ball either. This was going to have to be Dylan Gabriel, and he finally got it going a little bit, like, second quarter on, like, end of the second quarter on, and, like, looked functional. But for the entire first quarter, when this game was in doubt, non-functional. Like, and their offense was, they were trying to do short stuff, and that was just getting eaten up. He had pressure on him a ton, way more than they're used to. Ohio State just came in with a game plan to beat that ass, and they did quickly, and this game was over, I don't know, midway through the second quarter.
Yeah. 8 sacks, 13 tackles for loss for Ohio State. Holy shit. Like, it was, sorry, Griffin, but it was domination. Like you said, it was 34-0, and Oregon literally scores, like, with no time left on the clock and gets a two-point conversion to be like, hey, you know, and then they get the ball to start the second half. I think they scored – didn't they score right away, too? And it was 15. It was 34-15.
Yeah, it looked for a moment like it would be a game. Oh,
maybe, but it wasn't a game.
No,
it was,
honestly, if Oregon on the next drive had been able to do anything, I think the momentum, whatever you want to call it in college football, I think it might have shifted. Like, suddenly Oregon would be playing with confidence in the whole thing. But then on the next drive, I think they went 3 and out.
I think it was. It wasn't good.
It was a very quick drive, and they had to punt it away. And that was the point where you could have seen it flip, maybe. So they touch down, then they force a punt, and then on the next drive, they just get nothing. Dylan Gabriel gets sacked twice. Just Ohio State's defense, which has been the offense has improved a ton from last year. I can't take that away from Chip Kelly, even though he gacked away the Michigan game. But their defense, I mean, it's been lights out all year, and this is probably the best job anyone's done on Oregon. Well, certainly this year, but maybe going back last
year. For a while. Too. Yeah. 3.9 yards per play for Oregon. Ohio State, 8.8 yards per play, 500 yards of offense. It was, they dominated this. And we said this after the Tennessee game. It looked like Chip Kelly gave a crap. Like, he was going to try and score. Wasn't going to try to do it a certain way. Wasn't trying to prove a point. He was just like, what are we going to do? They hardly ran the ball early in this game. And I thought it was really smart by Chip Kelly. Like, yeah, would he like to run the ball? He's going to just torture you downfield. Like, they were taking shots, like, downfield all the time.
And Oregon had clearly geared its defensive attack or a defensive game plan around stopping the run. Because that's been, kind of, if they can do that, maybe they force them into uncomfortable situations. But they were coming into pass. And I think Oregon just kind of guessed wrong.
Yeah. And they opened up the field that way. And then they had some success running the football. But Will Howard how good did he look against Tennessee? Looked as good, I think. It was special what he was doing and finding your mismatches where they didn't do this kind of stuff in the Michigan game. And you're just scratching your head like, what the hell was going on? The fact that we saw against Tennessee, I felt like this was transfer. I like, this is, they're legit. So I had this one where I took Ohio State -2.5 in this one. And you went with your heart because you didn't want Chip Kelly to have success. You went with Oregon. I get it. Like, you wanted to pick Ohio State.
Yeah.
No question about the cover.
Nobody who watched their first game against Tennessee, I think, was walking into this one feeling super confident about Oregon.
Yeah. Oregon's really good. And they deserve.
They were walking into a buzzsaw.
They didn't deserve this, like, to be the number one seed.
No, this was screwed up. I mean, they should have been playing ASU. They should have been playing Boise State. SMU. They should have been playing somebody else. It could have been any number of teams, but they didn't.
They did look like ass. Like, they did not look good. They didn't look, super prepared. They ran into a buzzsaw, but this is a powerful Oregon team that can do some stuff. We saw like a play or two where that, highly paid defensive line got some pressure and stuff, but it was just few and far between. And the Ohio State offensive line, they used 30 different combinations this year, played really well. Ohio State's on fire, but Oregon, and I don't know if it's a 3.5 weeks off or whatever, you need it. They had the firepower to match. They could have made this like a super fun game. Like even the Arizona State game where Texas goes up early, but you stick around. Like they weren't able to stick around. They weren't able to mount much of a comeback. I think Oregon didn't play a good game either, but they needed the way Ohio State was playing. You had to play like A+, but they could have played like an A- game. And this could have been a lot of fun. It just wasn't fun. And I don't know what you take away, because there was a lot of resources put into Ohio State's roster, and they got a lot of shit for losing to Michigan and even losing by a point. But Oregon put a ton of resources into their roster too, and at no point did Ohio State look like this.
Look, no one is beating Ohio State's A game. Oregon could have played an A+ game, and they would have lost this one because that was Ohio State's A game. Now, Oregon didn't do that, but I don't think they played – you got to give credit to Ohio State. Like, what their defensive line did to Oregon's offensive line in this game was insane.
And that's a really good offensive line.
That's a really good offensive line, and that was insane. So that's just Ohio State. Oregon has really good players. They are a top five talent team. Ohio State is at a different level. And when they are cooking, no one's beating them. I mean, if they continue to play at this level, they're going to blow out Texas too. And then they're going to blow out whoever comes into the final. It's just a question whether they will maintain. But if they maintain at this level, no one's beating that team. No one else has anything like their three receivers. No one else has anything like their defense. Like that combination, it's okay. Sorry.
Yeah, but there was the offensive line and there was Will Howard. Yeah. But the last 2 weeks, they've both, you know, the two games, they've both looked like way more than serviceable, like elite. And, yeah.
Well, it's linked. If the offensive line plays like that, Will Howard's going to look a whole lot better.
Yeah, he did. So I'll put up, if you're watching on YouTube, I'll put up the bracket where we are now. So
we got to do a bonus recap, though.
A bonus recap of what?
We got to recap the Pac-12 in the
we can do the
quarterfinals.
We'll
baby.
Do that real quick. But I want to take a look at this real quick. So Ohio State's going to play Texas. Texas, you know, squeak. We'll talk about that. And then Penn State, you know, easier path. SMU and Boise State, they're in the semifinals. They get to play a Notre Dame team that looked really good today.
If Penn State wins that game against Notre Dame, that will be the biggest win of the James Franklin era.
Yeah, like this is the biggest accomplishment of the James Franklin era, but.
That would be the biggest win.
This would be the biggest win.
I'm counting like in terms of like who he's beaten and the ranked quality of them and the talent level of them. If he can actually pull that off against Notre Dame, I think those questions about James Franklin's ability to win big games should kind of be put to rest because that'll be an equal talent opponent in a huge spot.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of pressure on him to win that one and kind of put to rest some of those doubts.
Cool. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to do a bonus recap and then preview a game and do some questions. So back in a minute. Oh, and we also have a super chat from Brian. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. You're the man. I also forgot to mention one thing about Oregon. Bizarre stuff at the beginning of this game from Dan Lanning. They had,
like punted like when they should have punted.
Bizarre stuff. So in the opening, first drive, they have 4th and 1 at their own 34. That's a go, man. In that game, when you just saw what they did to you on the first drive, that's a go. And frankly, it's a go anytime. 4th and 1, go.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
Then a few drives later, they have a 4th and 6 at the Ohio State 49, and they punt it. And it ends up being a good punt, 40 yards out of bounds at the Ohio State 9. What are you doing? The score at that point is 14-0, and Ohio State has had absolutely no issues driving on you. Like even the drive where they punted, they went 42 yards. You got to go for that, man.
Yeah.
And look, would it have changed the game? No. But when we're talking about Oregon's, you know, whatever grade game they played, they didn't coach an A game either. Like this was some of Dan Lanning's worst work, I thought.
You
got
to like take advantage like every little margin, and they played to negative expected value.
Dan Lanning has to be an advantage on the sideline, and he just wasn't in the first half, and that was the game.
It wasn't going to be enough, but it would have helped, and that was bad.
Yeah. All right, but we got to get into a guy who is positive EV.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
They were taking on the Texas Longhorns.
Hold on.
Not just going to play because it's fun. If you don't expect to win every game, you got a problem. I don't care if I'm playing Michael Jordan in basketball. I'm not playing him to lose.
ASU was taking on Michael Jordan in basketball, or, you know, maybe at least like
Steve Sarkisian.
I don't know. Yeah. Sark, I don't know what you'd call him. This game was so much fun. It looked like it was on the way to a Texas, like not a blowout exactly, but like we're just completely outclassing this team. Like, you know, we've just got way more talent than them. And then the whole Dillingham-ness of it all started. So this was 24-8, I want to say, when things start going a little bit.
I think it was,
a little bit crazy. they're driving. So ASU has the ball, 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. They're down 24-8. And they're driving. They're moving it pretty well. And then they're lining up for a fourth and two at the Texas 42. Now, idiot Dan Lanning, he might punt there. Who knows this day and age? I love Dan Lanning, but come on, man. On fourth and two, they toss it to Cam Scadabo. So you're like, okay, Cam Scadabo, he's had a really good game. They're probably just going to run the ball here, right?
Yeah.
No, no. They toss it to him, and then he throws a 42-yard bomb to Malik McClain for a touchdown.
On fourth and two.
On that play, it was initially called for him to toss it back to Sam Levitt, you know, have it be like kind of a double toss where he throws the ball. But Sam Levitt apparently goes to him pre-snap and says, hey, I can't really run. I rolled my ankle. You're going to have to throw this one because I can't run to my spot on the field. And Scadabo's like, okay, I got this, and tosses that bomb. Now, I don't know if that story's true. That's just what Cam Scadabo said.
I haven't heard that one, but that's
But great. That's crazy. So they score. Then they go for two and obviously make it. So it's 24-16. So you're Sark. You're like, okay, well, we just got to control this clock, control the ball. We're going to be fine. Even if they get it back, they'll have to score a two-point conversion. But let's just hold on to the ball for a little bit long. What do? They throw a pick on their second play on the next drive. And then it's I think it was like a huge bomb that they threw downfield that was picked off. Then on the next drive, ASU drives it right down the field. Thanks in large part to this, I think, semi-wheel, you would call it, to Scadabo down the left sideline, where he does receiver shit better than most receivers,
yes.
Where he moves himself into the body of the defensive back, not in such a way that you would get a push off, but slows down so the guy kind of runs into him, and then he gets the semi-push from it, creates separation, bomb, 62 yards down the field.
Yeah.
They score very quickly after that, and it's 5 minutes to go, and ASU is tied up with the two-point conversion. On the next drive, and this is where I want to focus on Sark being a moron, they have it. Let me get this exactly right. They have it first and 10 at the ASU 30 with 2 minutes to go, right? So you're thinking at this point, we are holding on to this ball, and we are getting the field goal to win it or take it to overtime, right? But we're not letting ASU have another shot at this.
Right.
So you would run the ball, right?
Yeah.
2 minutes to go. You know, your running game, I mean, it's not been lights out, but you've moved it okay at times. Like, it's not been horrible. I mean, it's been pretty bad. It's been pretty awful. Let's be real. But you've only got to get probably 6 yards before you're pretty comfortable, even though the guy later misses two field goals. Like, you're probably feeling that way, right? Wrong. So on that drive, Texas passes it on first and 15 after a false start, passes it again on second and 15, and then runs for 5 yards with Quinn Ewers on third and 15 to get it to the 30, and then they miss the field goal. But in that time, they only forced ASU to take a single timeout, and they still allowed them a minute and 44 seconds.
There was a lot of time left.
To win the game.
And Sark went to his kicker and like gave him a pep talk or whatever. Oh, was that the next? That was the next field goal, I think.
I think that was the next one, okay, after they missed that one. So on the next drive, ASU again moves it downfield very quickly, and then complete horseshit happens on third and 15. They complete the pass to Melquan Stovall for 10 yards to the ASU 48 midfield, and he gets like textbook targeted. Like, it's not. This isn't like the judgment call one. This is a defenseless receiver who gets hit in the head.
With a helmet.
That's, I don't care if it's his face mask. I don't care if it's crown of the helmet. He gets hit in the head when he's defenseless. That is one of those things. That's one of the indicators. They don't call it targeting, and it's completely decisive. That 15 yards puts them, it would have put them at the 30, what would that be, 39?
Something like that, yeah.
For Texas. All they need to do is get another 9 yards, and then they're going to try to kick a field goal and maybe make it.
Yeah.
Also made our boy Chris Cartman incorrect, which I never like doing, because he predicted pregame ASU 27, Texas 24.
Right. He would have had it right.
So bullshit reffing is the only reason that Chris Cartman is not a god in everyone's book. He's obviously a god in our books. But they don't get that, and then it's fourth and five, and they punt it. Now, here is where I have a Dillingham issue. Fourth and five at the ASU 48. I know they're closer to your field goal and the whole thing, but you got to go for that, buddy.
Oh, okay.
You got to give your offense the chance to close the game. And you've been moving it. You've been moving it over and over and over again. You had no issues just getting 10 yards. You're going to have no issues getting five right there. Texas is tight. They're not playing well. They feel like the world is crashing down around their ears. You got to keep the pressure on.
Take it to them.
So I thought that was a misstep. It doesn't hurt them in the end, but Texas does immediately then drive down the field and misses another field goal, this one from 38. This was the one where Sark gave him a little pep talk beforehand, which is the second time in a few days I've seen a coach do something insane that you never see, which is giving your field goal kicker a pep talk. Head coaches do not talk to their field goal kickers. Like, they talk to them maybe at halftime, like, hey, how you doing? Is it nice sitting around during the game? But, like, you don't talk to them before kicks. That's insane. And I saw somebody do this at the UCLA-Gonzaga game where Mark Few, like, rubs up on his guy right before he has to make a free throw. It's like, you don't do that. What are you doing?
Yeah, let him do his thing.
Anyway, we then go to overtime, and overtime is also super cool and interesting. ASU gets the ball first. They did not win the toss, so they had to go first. It's a long, long drive from the 25. Takes forever. And then it's first and goal, I think it was, from the three, something like that, after a Sam Levitt run, which was incredible. It was a third and 14, and nothing was open. It wasn't a designed run, and he had to break, I'll call him broken tackles. He had to break three tackles to get the first down from three different guys.
Yes.
They all touched him. They weren't real broken tackles, but incredible scramble.
Chances,
and then Cam Scadabo scores where his offensive lineman suplexes him into the end zone. Very cool. They go up by a touchdown. And then my other problem is the next drive, Texas looks like they're doing nothing, absolutely nothing. They're faced with a fourth and 13 after a false start, and ASU goes zero blitz. And it's just, you don't have a man advantage anywhere on this field. Like, you don't really have a man advantage on defense. Just play zone, buddy. Like, just drop and force Quinn Ewers, who had started to look pretty shaky in the second half of this game, force him to make a tougher throw.
They had a 91% chance to win at that point.
And it's just, man. But, like, again, I don't – it wasn't hindsight. Like, watching it, I'm like, oh, man, don't do that. Because they'd also shown blitz really hard. And usually when you're showing blitz that hard and then they check, you check out of it too. Like, you check to some zone coverage that you're showing blitz, but then you drop eight. And they didn't. They just kept it on. And it's just, you know, I thought it was a misstep. But also, look, you're Kenny Dillingham. You're punching way above your weight. You want to go out guns blazing. I'm also like, okay, I get it. But I just thought two decisions where I think, look, you probably needed to coach a perfect game in this one, and it wasn't quite there. You know, fourth and five, that's a go. And then this one, I think you got to drop and play zone and just give them a chance, like, or at least just go cover two man where you've got the man under and then you've got the safeties playing at the sticks, you know, trying to prevent the touchdown. But awesome game. I mean, so great.
Way and, more exciting than most of the other ones.
And Kenny Dillingham, I mean, good God. I mean, what he's been able to do 2 years now.
He got an extension,
but you know, with the death of Dan Lanning this past weekend, or this yesterday? Jesus. With the death of Dan Lanning yesterday, Lan Danning, Kenny Dillingham's the best coach in America.
Now we got Denny Killingham.
That's right.
And Train. Train lives forever. Yeah. It was a pretty amazing game, and it didn't look like it would be. ASU's defense, just they played well. They you know, it was early, just kind of getting that hole, and then just kind of kept fighting through. And it didn't look like they were going to be able to make a play there. They kept going for it on fourth down and not getting it. They moved the ball well, but the red zone, Texas's defense was just freaking nasty.
Until it wasn't.
But most of the time, they were nasty.
Yeah.
How many times did they go for it on fourth down?
Like, ASU?
Yeah.
Do you know? I think it ended up being five or six.
Yeah. It was like as many times as Iowa did all season. Like, insane.
Yeah. Well, and that started to tip in their favor too, because again, it's just math. Like, they ended up 3 of 6 on fourth down. Yeah. I think they started 0-3.
That was so in this game, Arizona State had the exact same fourth down conversion record that Iowa had for the season.
Yeah.
How funny is that?
Well, and so Texas finished 7 of 15 on third and fourth down. ASU finished 13 of 30. So there's two ways to look at that. One, Texas's defense obviously kept ASU from hitting big plays a lot of times on first and second down.
Yeah.
So ASU was forced to run a lot of plays to get its yards. But I think this also speaks to the kind of what Kenny Dillingham has going, because with, again, I don't think they had a man advantage anywhere except for Scadabo. I think he's, you know, legitimately a great player. But everywhere else, I mean, they're playing against more talented guys. And to be able to consistently move the ball where you have to kind of eke out your yards and you've got to do these kind of, you know, razzle dazzle things, and being able to do it consistently, just really impressive.
Yeah.
ASU, I mean, those fans have to be absolutely giddy about what they've got going on right now.
Yep.
Pac-12 ascendant.
Yeah. Jim Choi says Texas ain't doing jack against Ohio State. We will see. We'll get to
Sark sucks.
Preview that later. All right, we got to preview one more game that's coming up, the Duke's Mayo Bowl, and that's going to involve
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
And they are taking on the Virginia Tech Hokies. Did we ever decide what those are?
The turkey, I think.
No? So gobble, 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 gobble.
Yeah.
Sure. Friday, January 3rd, that's tomorrow on at 4:30 p.m. This line has moved even a half point further from what I was saying earlier. Do we want to keep it where it was?
No, keep it where it is.
All right. Friday, January 3rd, 4:30 p.m. on ESPN, Minnesota against Virginia Tech in Charlotte at the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Minnesota is an 8.5-point favorite over Virginia Tech. I don't know anything about Virginia Tech.
You mean I know a little.
I don't know anything about Virginia Tech, except that they are in the ACC.
Yeah.
They lost to Vandy. They lost to Rutgers. They lost to Miami. They lost to Syracuse. They lost to Clemson. They lost to Duke. The teams they have beaten are all either shitty or ACC teams, but I repeat myself. Minnesota forged in the fires of the Big Ten. How many games away? How many just like single plays away are they from being like 10-2 right now?
Yeah.
North Carolina, that's one. Michigan, that's another. Rutgers, that's another. Penn State, that's another. Like, there's a world not too distant from here where Minnesota's 11-1 right now.
Crazy.
In the college football playoff. And you're telling me they're only 8.5-point favorites over Virginia Tech? Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
You're insane. You're crazy. Golden Gophers are winning this one by 17 touchdowns.
Wow.
Yep. They're scoring over 100 points. Are you ready for that?
I am not, but it would be fun because I'll be watching it tomorrow.
119-0.
Well, that's a bold prediction, David. I'm going to take Minnesota as well. This game opened, I think, at like 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Tech has a ton of opt-outs. How many Gophers have won like several bowl games in a row? Someone in the chat, I forget what is. Seven game win streak in the postseason for Minnesota. So PJ Fleck got them going in the right direction. One of the best defenses in the country. I think they only allow like 17.5 points a game.
And what region of the country is ascendant right now?
The upper Midwest, baby.
That's right, baby.
Yeah.
Which region of the country is supreme in college football, as we have determined now, painstakingly?
Midwest, yeah.
Which Big Ten team won the Rose Bowl? Was it the Midwest team, or was it the one from the west side of the Midwest, West Coast?
It was the Midwest team. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Here's the problem with Virginia Tech, and this is why the line has moved a lot. Starting running back, edge rusher, defensive lineman, all out. And the quarterback, Kyren Drones, announced he's going to be coming back, but he got hurt, and I haven't been able to find if he's out for sure, but it seems like he's likely out. And I think that's why the line has moved enough, even more. So I think this is going to be a depleted defense for Virginia Tech. And we already know that Minnesota's defense is really good. So I think Brosmer and them, they'll score some points. But I think the defense is probably going to shut down Virginia Tech, especially without a quarterback.
That's right, baby.
So I'm going to go with you and go Minnesota. So Tony says Fleck is 5-0, but in general, I think Minnesota's won their last seven bowl games. And Jim said, because if you know the Duke's Mayo Bowl, what's the deal? They dump mayo on the head of the winning coach.
That's right.
He says if he gets a mayonnaise dump after the game, Fleck having no hair will be good. Yeah, that's true. You don't have to get it out of your hair. It's good to be bald.
And Brent Pry has a very good head of hair, looking at him now. Also,
the Virginia
here's
Tech
how coach. Little I know about Virginia Tech football. I could have sworn Justin Fuente was still their head coach, and I think he was fired like at minimum 3 or 4 years ago.
I think so.
So anyway, that's where I am with Virginia Tech football. But yeah, I mean, the most important thing to remember is Midwestern ascendance, and that's what's going to continue here.
Speaking of that, we did have a question in the chat. Alex, I know schools have been paying players secretly for a while, but do you think it being out in the open breaks the SEC monopoly there?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and this is a point that we made a bunch of times when this started happening like 4 years ago, is that it might take other schools a while to get their infrastructure built up for cheating in the way that the SEC has always had, like the Bagman thing. Like the SEC, they just changed the name of it, but this always existed, right? Local business owners paying money for players to just play. That's always been a thing in the SEC. And it took a while, I think, for other schools to kind of build up the infrastructure, build up the donor awareness, build up the booster awareness and all that kind of stuff. But now that it's done, I mean, you don't think there's a lot of well-heeled people at Ohio State who want to pay for players or Michigan or any of these schools? Like, and it you know, I won't say it levels the playing field. I still think you're going to see the top teams be the top teams. But I think between the top teams, maybe it levels things a little bit there. You know, in that upper echelon of the top 10 teams, if the money is relatively equal and the interest is relatively equal, and I don't think you can say anything about the Big Ten other than the fans certainly give a shit.
Just means more.
It just means more. It just meant more when you were, you know, free to cheat. But now everyone's cheating, or, you know, being legal now, according to present rules. So I do think, I do think it has played a role. I think it has benefited the top tier of balance. Like, I don't think it changes anything meaningfully for, like, Minnesota. Compared to like Georgia, but I do think it meaningfully changes things for Ohio State, for Michigan, maybe Penn State, some of these schools that already had a very high level of talent, their ability to get even better class of players in the portal and in high school recruiting.
Yeah. Sorry, I gotta finish this up. Well, let's try to get through this. I got to get out of here. West Texas Mike sent an email. But it's like a video included. I'm not watching it right now. Sorry.
Fair enough. Sorry. Sorry, West Texas Mike. We love you.
Like, we love you. But he offered to give us like West Texas Mike's in the chat. But it's hard to just do video things. Like, just send us a question.
Yeah. All right. This is from Frank Magellans. A second linebacker hit Genty. Penn State is on the attack. Only a genius coach like James Franklin could come up with a game plan to make sure 2+ guys were on Genty to bring him down. Before this game, I was sure only the 85 Bears could have held Genty to 3.5 yards per carry. Can anyone stop Franklin's Nittany Lions now that he has broken his big game curse by winning the biggest game of his career? Thanks, Frank.
I don't think it's a big game curse. It's a big brand curse.
Yeah, so I don't.
He's got to beat a brand.
This
name.
Does not qualify. No. I don't think.
I mean, it's a huge result, but it's not.
No, Notre Dame is the big one. I think this poster he's got a bit going, and yes. I don't fully understand it. That being said, I think the next game is the big one. If he beats Notre Dame, even if they lose the title game, if he beats Notre Dame, I think you got to give James Franklin his flowers.
Yeah, Michael says Michigan Ohio hatred. Since somebody raised the issue of why Michigan Ohio State rivalry is so intense. Here's the real origin of hostility between the two states. Long before they were playing football, Michigan and Ohio have hated each other. Stems from a border dispute in 1835, which led to an actual war between Ohio and Michigan. Due to political influence, Ohio eventually got most of the disputed land, but the hatred of each other remained. It eventually became associated with football. The final land dispute wasn't settled until 1973. I don't know of any other football rivalry can claim its roots are in an actual war. If anyone would want to know more, they can search Toledo War. Also, I think you guys already covered. I'm sorry, you're already covering reality television. Most, quote, reality shows are scripted, manipulated, and edited heavily to create suspense and a narrative. The only true reality TV is sports. It's almost always televised live, and they don't edit out parts. The outcome isn't predetermined. About the only control the producers have is when to schedule the game, who will be the broadcasters, and when to show replays. Most of the rest of the shows called reality TV is a hoax.
That's clearly Michael didn't watch the targeting call against ASU in the ESPN branded Peach Bowl.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny about this. Remember they mentioned the reality show was in like 20 years ago or whatever it was. Worst case scenario, I come out of a car and I don't know what I'm doing. It's like a kind of a wooded area on a farm, and I see a couple people emerge out of this little hollow with full-on beekeeper gear on. And so then I realized, okay, so I didn't know what scenario I was going to be put in. It was going to be a bee scenario because there was beekeepers there. And one of the bee people walk up and takes off the mask, and it's my sister. And I had no idea she was going to be there. And I'm like, oh my God, I was so surprised. I'm like outside of Austin, Texas somewhere. I give her a big hug. I'm like, that's great. Let's do it again. I'm like, do what again? Act surprised to see your sister. I'm like, I was surprised to see my sister, but they wanted to get more takes, you know? And I'm like, so now I'm acting. So it's like, I was surprised to see my sister, and I was, you know, whatever. So yes, it's fake. They have you do stuff. They had me say things afterwards, like just try to add drama to it. So yes, it's not real. I mean, there's some real stuff, but they produce a lot of it.
All right. This is from James from Phoenix.
Okay.
Good evening, gentlemen. I had the strong urge to text you after the last pod, reprimanding you for not breaking down a legacy Pac-12 team's biggest game in many years. I held off because I didn't want you to read my last text after the fact on simulcast if ASU lost by 4 scores. But golly, Denny Killingham almost pulled it off. Pac-12 legend. Beat Chip Kelly without an offensive line and without a quarterback. Lined up Cam Scadabo outside the hash and ran a go route for 62 yards on the best defense in the nation. Go Devils, long live the Conference of Champions, and please show some respect to your former conference next time. Love you. Good night. I hope our breakdown, which I think was longer than our breakdown of the Big Ten games, yes. I hope that was sufficient for you.
You went for a long time.
Yeah. I was so impressed. I love the Pac-12, and I miss it so badly.
Yeah. Good stuff, James. Yeah, hopefully we gave it the respect it deserved. This one, I think this might be from one of our Bruin dudes. Text message. What do you attribute this year's parity to and the exceptionally poor performance of the SEC? Common narrative would be transfer portal NIL, i.e. now everyone can buy players. But is there any other factors? Is it just a random event, or do we think this is a sign of things to come?
I mean, I think anytime you point to anything, it's any kind of broad thing, there's a lot of factors. But I would start with NIL and transfer portal has definitely had a huge impact. Indiana doesn't make the college football playoff if they didn't have access to the transfer portal and NIL funds. Like, that doesn't happen.
True.
At the same time, though, I think there was a confluence of events in the SEC that played a role. Georgia's off-field issues in the offseason, that was a semi-depleted Georgia team, and then they also had Carson Beck go down. I think this entire season was kind of a Georgia team with a limp. You know, I won't say they were like amputated foot, but a Georgia team with a limp. Alabama coaching change, first time in 17
no
years.
Nick Saban,
like. No Nick Saban. No Nick Saban. And then the rest of it, you know, I mean, Ole Miss kind of did what Ole Miss does. LSU, and I don't think Brian Kelly has taken advantage of the portal the way he needs to at LSU. Has not taken advantage in recruiting the way he needs to there. And just not a good fit. And so I think you took a very talented LSU team, and I think you've got a bad fit coach for them. And then, you know, the rest of the league was what it is. You know, Florida still trying to get back to some level of success, not there yet. South Carolina, decently good, not great. And Texas, you know, about what you would expect given, you know, I think they lost their starting running back before the start of the season.
Yeah.
So I think there were some weird off-field injury type things that happened to some teams. I think there were coaching changes. I think there's a bad fit coach at LSU. So a confluence of events, but I think also you look at Ohio State, that's the most talented team in the country. And that's been true at times, but it's demonstrably true. Like, they are
more talented than Alabama and probably more talented than Georgia.
They took Alabama players, like when the Saban thing.
And you look at Indiana and it's like, well, you know, they're not untalented. I mean, frankly, they just played Notre Dame closer than Georgia did. So, there's just been some balancing. I do think some of it was just factors SEC internal, like having to do with coaches, injuries, off-field issues, all that kind of stuff. But also, you know, the other kind of elite conference got better. Lost in all of this is that Notre Dame kind of rope-a-doped everyone by losing to Northern Illinois. But that's a goddamn good team.
Yeah. What, 11 straight? Yeah. Or 12 straight wins now?
Yeah.
After that? Yeah, I agree with you on all that. I think the transfer portal, for sure, like, it allowed Ohio State to get some extra elite players to fill in gaps. But it also allows, like, other teams to get sort of like the third string guy at Georgia that normally would just be on the roster and isn't anymore. And then if you do get a guy get hurt, he went to go start somewhere else. And that helps that other team, and it hurts Georgia too. So I do think there's more parity than ever before. And it sort of happened with a confluence of this extended playoff, where in a normal year, Ohio State wouldn't be able to make this run. They would beat the crap out of, they do like what Oregon did last year in, what was it, the Cotton Bowl or something, and just destroy Liberty. Like, well, Ohio State got a chance, and when they're hot, and they got to use that roster, and it worked. So, we didn't see that from the SEC. Like, Texas looks like great on defense. Like, Georgia just hadn't been the same. Carson Beck was just sort of meh all season. And
yeah,
we've seen Alabama play really well at times and then just fall apart. Like, even the Georgia game, they looked amazing and then they just did nothing. But we haven't seen someone put it together, you know, even like what Oregon was doing all season. We didn't see that in the SEC. And for Penn State to be able to kind of rise up and do what they've done too. So, yeah, I think some of it is like some of that depth in the SEC that's normally there isn't there now. It's for other teams.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, I got to wrap it up. Any kind of
final thoughts?
Any face you want to make for the?
Oh,
did someone comment on like our screenshots or something? I don't know.
I don't know. Did somebody?
I thought I read something.
I mean, they look very strange.
Yeah. Usually you make a weird face or something. So
I don't know. What am I supposed to do?
I don't know.
You've got me confused now.
I'm not
sure. Should I make a confused face?
Yeah, let's do a confused. Like, what's the? Okay, good enough. For David Edwards, I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.